modern state. And the CIA, MI5, all of them slept it. And they've been playing catch-up ever since. U.S. policy towards Iran, U.S. policy towards Iraq is catch-up policy. Based on that misunderstanding or failure to perceive what was happening in that region. Changed the whole political paradigm. Changed the whole geopolitical paradigm. So it becomes necessary, therefore, for every black politician to get on a plane and fly to Tel Aviv. Have you ever noticed that? Every black congressional, I don't know if my brother over here made his trip yet. Every black politician. he made his trip. He's on the road.
Wait a minute. Since you're calling on me, brother.
Now, Jackie, did you make a trip?
You're calling on me. I've also been to Gaza. Uh-huh.
They let you in, though, didn't they?
Well, you know, would it be better if I didn't go in?
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't want me to go to Gaza. So you actually
no, I'm telling you, you know why I tell you it would have been better if you didn't go?
The people I talked to wanted me there, wanted me to bring
the
their
people
story
people in Gaza
back.
Want everybody here.
So why shouldn't I go to try to bring their story?
Nobody said you shouldn't go. You said it would have been better if I didn't get in. That's what you said.
No, I said if I didn't go.
No, you said it would have been better if I didn't get in.
I said, well, do you want a somatic thing?
Okay, fine. It would have been better if you didn't get in. Now, it would have been good if you went and you didn't get in.
Well, I'm glad I did go and I'm going back.
Oh, I know you'll go back and I know you'll get in.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, the thing is, man, is that if you've been, I remember sitting down with you when I was a law student about 20 years ago.
Oh, and this is what happened?
You know what? I'm not taking it personally. I'm taking it.
I'm only adding some humor.
Okay. And so I'm taking it seriously, not personally. And so look, you know, there's a lot of things I would like to say, you know, to I think bring another perspective to the one you just given. But tonight's your night, so I'm just not going to do that.
Every night's my night.
Well, and so
I mean, you
so,
can feel free. It doesn't. I mean, that's what.
Well, no.
I think folks here would be interested in hearing that themselves. Well, because you see, the problem, you see, the situation here is the reason why I mentioned you, and it wasn't personal. It wasn't personal at all. The reason why I mentioned it is because when we understand how the opposition works.
Yeah.
A lot of time the opposition works by preparing the way with people who have good intentions and that they know have no power. And now that may you may have had the best of intentions.
So think it through, brother. So what you're saying is working to change this system with good intentions is ultimately a futile thing to do? I mean, you've made a lot of good critiques.
Is that a question that you're asking me? That statement right there is working to change the system with good intentions is what was the final part?
You're saying that's futile? You're saying that we should just not engage? I mean,
that's not the alternative to that. You made a statement. You asked me, was working to change the system with good intentions futile? Yes.
Well, I don't agree with that. And so, you know, I think that you lead people down a path where they feel nothing's going to... You said once you know something, you either have to do something about it or you have to admit you don't care. That's wrong. People know that there's something going on, but they don't feel they have the power to do anything about it. It's not a matter of not caring. It's a matter of not feeling the power to do it. And so, you know...
So you feel that you're empowering people?
I feel that I'm trying to do the best I can with what I have. And so, look, but I don't know. I mean, think about you, man. You haven't brought about socialist nirvana in America either.
I'm not a socialist.
Well, whatever kind of world you're trying to bring about.
And I've never tried to bring about
you
socialism.
Let me
be clear about my motives here.
Right.
My motives are very simple. Ain't nothing complicated about me. You know, I don't like oppressors. I don't like exploiters. Wait a minute, let me finish.
And
I don't like
time.
Wait a minute.
To do so.
I'm coming.
Right.
I don't like time. I don't like oppressors. Huh? That's why I spent 19 years in prison. I didn't spend 19 years in prison because I felt that I had good intentions and I was going to try to change the system. I know the nature of tyrants. I know the nature of oppressors. It's right there in history books. I know their nature. You will not change them with good intentions. The only way
I'm
you
not trying to change them.
No, wait a minute. No, you have to get rid of them. And the only way you're going to get rid of them is really pure and simple. You got to knock them out the box. And not by voting. You ain't going to get them out the box by voting. You're going to get another Obama. Don't tell me that this Negro that became president, that promised these people all of this bullshit, had good intentions, and now we're supposed to fucking talk to them. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. That would be a lie. That would be a lie. So what I'm trying to say to you, my opposition, the way I deal with this, the way I deal with tyrants and oppressors, I speak out directly to them. I challenge them directly. And if they want to get physical, I get with that too. Okay? So it's all, that's what it's all about. Because don't think that those 19 years that I had in prison, that them crackers couldn't have murdered me anytime they felt like it. They could have did that. They could have bumped me right off. But they didn't. I'm here talking to you. And why do you think that is?
Is that a question to me?
Yeah.
Why do I think...
How do you think I wound up in this place talking to you at this moment in time?
Is that a cosmic question? Or
you can take it as a cosmic, as a subjective, as an ontological question. Well, ain't a cosmic about it.
Well, here's how I answer your question. First of all, you know, much of the critique that you have, I'm not here to dispute. You know, but I think that at the end of the day, if all you have is a complaint,
I just explained to people
I was sitting here listening to you. You kept up with the. Okay. You know. You know what? I'm not walking here.
I know what people are thinking, but it's not. I know it's not that. I'm saying, just finish what you said.
No. Okay, well, okay, so how much do I get a moment to talk, or
you're just saying?
Well, first of all, let me just start off with one of the first things you said, which is that the reason that that Obama is in there is because he's more white than black.
No, that's not what I said.
Well, he had more in common with whites than blacks. What about this? What about this reason? What about maybe given 30, 40 years of flat wages, given the social decline of the meaning of whiteness, that now whites have an opportunity to have more in common with people of color, which allows them to...
I do believe that. You do?
I believe it. Well, were you going to interrupt me or not?
I'm sorry.
But see, that's the game, though, man.
But go ahead.
You say a bunch of things, provocative things. Anybody says something back, you attack.
Go ahead.
No, because you went on for about 2 hours.
I'm supposed to.
And you know what? And then you don't let me say nothing.
No, go ahead.
And I'm going to tell you this. You ain't gonna let me say something or not, but I'm not gonna stand here and let you just.
No, go ahead. Finish.
Well, look, the fact is that there's always been, and I think you would agree, a number of interracial collections of people fighting this change oppression. This was going on in the 20s. It was going on in the 30s. It was going on in the 1860s. So you can't say, you said when you made the point, hey, look, you people, you went on with the you people comment, and you said that this person who said this to you felt that there was some impenetrable barrier between you and them. You seem to be saying the same thing. The fact is, you know, people have have more in common than they've ever had before. When the fact is that we don't have we don't have Jim Crow segregation anymore. We have had a flattening of wages of everybody. We have seen deindustrialization. And everybody is concerned about it, and people want to do something about it. It's true, black unemployment is higher than white unemployment. But white unemployment officially is 9.7%, which is Depression-era unemployment. Which means that there's a broad dissatisfaction, and therefore a basis for people coming together. And it's happened all over the place. I mean, the fact is, I know how you feel about elections, but if there are any measure of what people want and people are doing what they think is right, you're seeing black politicians being elected by majority white districts all the time. And you're seeing something else, too. You're seeing even white politicians being electing white politicians who speak to their issues. Take, for example, a guy named Steve Cohen in Memphis. His voting record is way more progressive than Harold Ford's is. And he actually introduced a resolution, was a chief author, to apologize for slavery. Now, I'm not trying to tell you everything he ever did or everything he ever said is great. I'm simply saying that to argue that there is some impenetrable barrier between people with different racial groups, and that the only reason that Obama was elected is because he has more in common with whites, is a mistaken idea, and it's not true. The reason people voted for Obama is because he offered them an opportunity and a stark departure from Bush-era politics. And they and that people felt in Iowa and a lot of other places that, you know what, I'm really ready for something new, and I'm not focused on this man's melanin, I'm focused on what I believe might happen if I make a different choice. So that's one thing, to just start out talking about one basic flaw in your whole presentation. The other thing is you've got a lot of negative things to say about the Black Caucus, but who was the first who was the person who voted against Bush's authorization for war right after 9/11? Well, that was Barbara Lee, who's the chair of the Black Caucus.
The only one Congress.
I wasn't there yet. Okay. Well, I know. I'm there, Steve. I know what I'm talking about.
Michael.
Okay. Well, whatever. And so let me just also say that when you talk about people standing up for the people of Palestine, you know, most of the people who stood up to fight against the condemnation of the Goldstone report, Black Caucus highly overrepresented. Myself, Barbara Lee, Maxine Waters, many, many others. Look at the numbers. We got 58 people who said we are not going to denounce this report, and many of them. Then the other thing is, we got about 54 members to stand up to write a letter to the president saying you must open Gaza. You have to open it up now.
Where's your letter?
Well. What do you mean, where is it? You mean, where do I have it on me?
What happened to you?
Well, we're pushing it. Can you help? I mean,
I ain't helping y'all do nothing.
Well, that's, well, exactly. But see, but exactly, you ain't helping.
But I'm going to tell you why.
No, exactly, you ain't, you're not helping because you want to promote cynicism.
No.
And I'm trying to promote a better, and I'm trying to promote positive social change and economic change for people.
Okay.
And so you want to make people feel nothing can go well? And I feel that it can go well if we come together and are consistent and persistent. Because that's the, because you know it's not true that it's not true that when Americans have come together in the past that we have not been able to change this country in a better direction. And it's also not. And it's also,
when has that been though? Give me an example of when folks came together in the past and it changed.
Jim Crow, not Jim Crow.
Tell me when the country came together and changed.
I never said that the country came together.
Said?
I said
the people.
Tell me when the people in America came together and changed something.
Not all of them did.
I didn't ask you that. You just made a statement. Give me a historical moment when you did that.
Well, it was over a range of years. It wasn't all
give
of
me,
one
just
time.
Give me one of them.
Well, let's start from 1954 till 1965.
And that's supposed to be a theory when people in America came together change something.
When some people in America came together and changed the country, right? Now, I don't even think you could deny that we're better off without Jim Crow, right? I don't even think you would say that, would you? Are you going to say that Jim Crow would be better if we still had it? Or what would you say?
That's not the issue.
Well, it is in part the issue. Here's why it is.
But first of all,
let me tell you why I think it is at least a part of the issue. Then I'm going to be quiet. You can finish your comment. Because you correctly identify American foreign policy as a very dangerous thing for the people of the world. I think you're right about that. In fact, I think that if we come together and we put up a strong opposition to this imperialist.
Who's with?
Well, the people in this room, for
example. Oh, okay, that's correct.
Right? And more than just this room. Way more than just this room.
You gotta have more than this room.
Right. Yeah. But people who would rather be a part of humanity than above it. You know, and I think there's a lot of Americans who want to see the world that changed that way, who want to reach out across the water. We want to reach out and internationally. But if you just say that everything sucks and everything's bad and nothing ever gonna happen, then you know what? Then we will capitulate with the system and the worst elements of it. But if we believe, and if people like you would use your voice to say, you know what? What we need to do is not just buy canned goods for the next storm, but actually organize to really oppose. Let's start with Gaza, but then the whole policy over there. Maybe we could get ourselves together. But the movement, in my opinion, stays on the margin, and because it stays on the margin, We don't ever reach into issues of power to really change, make the changes that I think we could make. So, you know, I'm going to tell you honestly, I just came to listen tonight, and if you wouldn't have been signifying on me, I wouldn't have said a word.
I just signified on you so you would say a word. And I'm glad you did jump out here.
So now, I got one more thing to say.
What about Mamiya?
You got that Baptist minister in
there. No, I got one more thing to say.
What about Mamiya?
Mamiya
Abdul-Jamal.
Yes.
Mamiya Abdul-Jamal.
Excuse me. Just let him finish. No, you know what? I'm going to tell you, we gotta get comfortable with trying to acquire some power. Because we've been dogged by power, we're so distrustful of it, we act like we don't even want it. And it always gets used on us. And so what I'm saying is right now, you asked me about Mumia Abu-Jamal. You know, you put something on my mind tonight. You really did. And we'll see what happens. Well, let me tell you, I have always, the people in this room have to admit, I have always consistently opposed the death penalty. Without exception. Right? Without ever any exception. Now, I'm going to tell you, you want something done on Mumia Abu-Jamal? Let's begin that conversation. Frankly, I'll be honest. I hadn't really even thought about it. Okay? About a resolution in Congress raising questions about Mumia Abu-Jamal and saying there must be an investigation on this case. I hadn't really even thought about it. But I'm going to walk out of this room thinking about it. In the same way that I brought other resolutions and done other things, including impeachment, including stuff on detention. I've been down in Guantanamo to address these issues. They're not going to stop. And it's not going to be an overnight thing. But one thing I'm not going to do is stand on the sideline and talk about everything sucks and how everything's bad and how nothing ever works. Because that doesn't lead nowhere. And I'm telling you, man, I love your critique, and I wrote, took notes on what you were saying.
See, I ain't taking no notes on what you just said.
But it's okay, and I'm not going to let you insult me, because...
I'm not insulting you. That's not an insult.
But the point is that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this your crowd, you're going to say what you want to say.
Hey, I'm going to say what I want to say if this wasn't my crowd. don't get this twisted.
But I'm not getting twisted.
You are getting twisted.
I'm trying to sit down. You think I only sing
to the choir? I don't just sing to the choir.
Well, you know, yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You absolutely don't.
No, I don't. Go back to your black caucus and ask how many of these Negroes I was saying to.
Well, this is the first time I'm talking. Well, I'm going to tell you this. I've been there 3 years, and I haven't heard from you there yet.
You know why? Because before you got there, I stopped singing to them Negroes.
Well, there's new Negroes, okay? And you can come talk
to some
Negro.
I only know old Negro.
Well,
that's like Puff Daddy with his musical award.
I'm using your word. You said Negro. I don't like the term, but that's what you said. So whatever. My point is,
but you were making the last point.
My point is, there are new people every day who are looking for constructive ways to move forward with some action. You know what you say is.
That's not what I said. That's a mischaracterization. I told you what I said. I didn't say that there's this impenetrable divide between people in this country. What I said was that this nation is an empire in denial. Okay? And the major contradiction in this country, between people in this country is their inability to face history and face up to the realities of their historical being. Okay, that's the contradiction. White folks in America don't want to admit to their history. They clean it up, they modify it, they don't want to deal with it. And as long as they don't want to deal with it, the issues never get dealt with. It's nothing about being impenetrable. It has to deal with people being ignorant and wallowing in that ignorance because they prefer it. And because that's part of the national characteristic, to be an ignorant ass. That's what Americans are, ignorant. And if you go to Cuba or any place else and you compare junior high school students with their knowledge of the world and American high school students, you'd be shocked. It's ignorance. It's studied ignorance. And what I want to say is this. No one said that the divide between black and white is impenetrable. But you got to remember, there's not one historical moment in this country where white folks in mass came on board for a just cause that had to deal with black people. Not one historical moment. not one.
That's right.
That's why you can't name one. Everything, that's why you use the word some. That's why you use the word some. You said some people. And those some people are some of the same people that's in jail right now that's political prisoners. Those are the some people. The same ones. Okay? The ones that's sitting up, my comrades that's dead. Those were the some people that came together to change this. And the fact of the matter is, when a black person gets murdered in Chicago, when a black kid gets shot down by the cops in New York City, you don't see white folks coming out demonstrating horrified over what happened. They don't come out. And the reason why they don't come out?
Do we organize them?
What?
Do we organize them?
Yes! 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 They don't come out. The reason why they don't come out is because they don't identify with what's happening. And they don't identify with what's happening. It's something that you really got to deal with. Okay? And that black politicians don't want to deal with. Okay? The fact of the matter is that the United States is a nation state. It's a national security state that evolved on the proposition and the premise of white supremacy. And they have never confronted that historical contradiction. And
as long as they don't... What I'm saying to you is...
Wait a minute. Now, you try to... I'll let you talk now. I'll let you talk.
And if we organize...
I'll let you talk. I'm coming. I'm coming to that part. You said that the reason why Obama, the reason why people voted for Obama, I'm just capsulizing this because you mentioned a number of points. I'm capsulizing this. I'm saying that up front because you mentioned a number of points that I would like to address individually, but you know it was a little bit much. But you said encapsulation that there was a level of discontent and disconcertedness in the country as a whole amongst white folks who felt that they were ready for a change that this man represented. That's an encapsulation, basically, of what you said. Okay? That's basically what you said. And I'm saying to you that if you go back and you read Du Bois, if you go back and you read Mountain, if you go back and you read all of the historical analysis of American society, okay, you find. And this was the major contradiction of the Communist Party of USA and why they failed. Because you got to remember, one of the foremost advocates against racism and discrimination in early America were the communists in this country. White communists. Okay? So for you to tell me that I think that there's some impenetrable barrier between white folks and black folks.
All about what you said.
That's not what I said. I didn't say nothing about an impenetrable barrier. I talked about the dichotomy and the dialectics of the situation. Nobody said it was impenetrable. Anything man creates, he could uncreate. Okay? But what you were trying to point out was that there were a whole bunch of demographic factors. There were a whole bunch of sociological and political factors. Urbanization, for instance. We've inherited obsolete urban infrastructures. Through migration. How did migration proceed in the U.S. from the south to the north? When did it proceed? At what point in capitalist production did it succeed? All these issues that you were talking about at the top were symptoms of what happened at the bottom. And the bottom line of this is that African-American workers and white workers in this country have a different historical destiny. They have a different historical formula for their resolution of their contradiction. It's not the same. The black experience in America is not the same as the white experience in America. And that dichotomy is not impenetrable. That dichotomy relies on sincerity and truth. That only when you have a truthful dialogue, can people come together and say, wait, I can see where you're coming from. And they can say, well, damn, man, let's work together on this. That requires a truthful dialogue. And what I'm trying to say to you is that the majority of people that you got in the black caucus today and the majority of black leaders of today are not involved or want to be involved in a truthful dialogue. That's not their purpose. Their purpose is to get paid. Their basic purpose is to get paid. Because every time, you can tell me that's not true, but whenever the tire hits the road, it's about getting paid. It's about getting reelected and getting paid. Now, you're talking about entrees to power. You're talking about entrees to power and how to move on power. I'll give you a good example. When I was in prison, when I went to prison in 71 for the pastor on this conspiracy case, there were hardly any black police, black correction officers in the Department of Correction. After we done tore up the prisons and you had Attica and Auburn riots, and George Jackson was murdered in California, and you had black inmates agitating for unions, black inmates organizing unions, before you realized that criminal justice was an industry. Criminal justice in America is an industry. and it applies on a commodity. And the commodity is this, black flesh. Okay? Before there was these correction officers, there was these white correction officers. That's all the guys was up there. Then we started getting all these black correction officers in after Adams. Because one of the major demands is that the prison guards had nothing in common with the prisoners, and it was this disconnect, this impenetrable barrier between guard and inmate, sociologically, politically, and everything. The black officers come in, and in order for them to fit into the system, they got to be as much like the white officers as possible. They got to engage in the goon squad beat-ups. They got to do all of that stuff. They got to harass your people. They got to do everything that the system does. Okay? And although every time you ask them why they're there, they want to make a difference. They want to change this. So I asked one guard one time, I said, look, you know, you're always telling me about how you in this to change the system and how you want to work. I said, what if, you know, I was trying to escape? And there was nothing between me and freedom but you and your gun and that towel. Would you shoot me? You know what he told me? What do you think he told me?
You wouldn't tell a story unless it had a certain outcome.
Now I'm asking you, what do you think the answer would be?
Man, it's your storytelling.
The answer was, and he was in a dilemma. But this guy is a genuinely nice guy. This dude ain't no evil person that was in this thing, you know, to glory over people being locked up. This wasn't a guy like that. So this was a guy that was, you know, kind of thoughtful. I said, so would you shoot me? You know what he said? He said, if my job didn't depend on it, no. So I'm telling, that tells you, that tells me, that told me then, okay, that told me then, that you can go into an institution, you know, you can go into an institution with the best of intentions as an individual to make the most, to make the best change and have, and effectuate the most change and find yourself in an institution that will completely neutralize you and spit you out like a piece of doo-doo.
Well, of course.
I let you talk now. I want to conclude because this was your
30 seconds.
Your point. Your point seconds. Was 30 seconds when I finished this point. Your point seconds. Was you get 30. Your point was, okay, that we should be involved in the process of empowerment. That we should try to get involved in the process of empowerment from the inside, you understand, in order to facilitate change. And I'm saying that the system relies on you having that idea that you go inside of it and change it, and it'll change you before it will change. And your change was not Martin Luther King inside the system. It will change America. And you got a point when you said that there's a lot of us who organize on the outside are really afraid of the authority or the position of power. Then once we get power, we won't know what to do with it. It's easy for us to sit outside and throw stones, but once you get inside, you have to make decisions. It's a different can of worms. Okay, and that's true. That's why you see every revolutionary government on the African continent, once it became went into power, the elites in those revolutionary parties became the same forces to oppress and exploit and marginalize the people. ANC, PAIGC, FRELIMO, all of them organizations are now parties of the institutional powers in those countries. And if you go talk to those people in Mozambique, in South Africa, you find out that nothing has significantly changed in their lives from these people. Why? Because a nation lives in the community of nations. Okay? No matter what your intentions are, when you came into power, if you came into power as a revolutionary movement, once you became a nation state, you had to deal with all the other nation states of the world. And that means that a lot of your radical ideas had to change. That means you had to administer power a certain way. Nelson Mandela didn't go from prison to president by accident. He went from prison to president by design. And he was meeting, and Nelson will tell you this, he was meeting with the financiers of Europe a year and a half, 18 months before he got out of prison. So what I'm trying to say to you is that your role in the Congress, your intentions may be, as you stated, to work inside of the system and with people who have common interests and better the lives of these folks through trying to bring through those sincere legislations and those sincere policies that will address people's needs. That's what you basically are there for. You're not there to get paid, to get rich. That's what you're saying. Fine, I hear it. But I'm saying the system needs you inside to do that in order to do what it's doing. That the real way the change comes in this country is not from within. The real way the change came in this country historically has been from without.
Well, the real way is not completely organizing from
without.
It is, you don't leave an opportunity to work power on the table. What I'm talking about is
that's
a massive
win. Nuremberg.
What I'm talking about is
what I'm talking about is
a mass movement. I am talking about. Not, I don't believe you can change an institution from within by yourself. Of course you cannot do that. Of course that institution will work on you like sand works on a stump. And over time, you don't have a mass movement driving. You're connected with.
But you just answered your own question.
Well, what I'm saying is, you say only without. I'm not saying only within. I'm saying that there is a ton of things that you left out that are important to know, and that if all you do is tell people that, you know, the revolutionary movement gets in power, then becomes just like the institution that tried to.
But there's a reason for that.
Then my answer to you is, what are we going to do about it?
Okay,
there will be. No, there will.
Want me to answer that question?
Go, please do.
What we do about it? What we do about it? Let me give you an example. When the Black Panther Party in '68 called for a People's Constitutional Convention, '69, we called for a People's Constitutional Convention. Okay, because we were naive. Okay, because at that particular historical moment, you had a massive anti-war movement in the United States. Okay. White kids were going to Canada to avoid the draft. It was this massive anti-war sentiment in the United States. Over 65% of the people in the U.S. was against the Vietnam War. Okay? At the same time, you had the Black Power movement, the Black Civil Rights movement, which was causing massive social change and upheaval in the country. So you had this historical moment, okay, where the Panther Party said, well, damn, let's get all of the progressive people in the country together. Go for a constitutional convention. Let's ratify a progressive outline for a constitution. Take this back to our local constituency and see if we can work on this constitutional measure to change the constitution in ways that reflected the needs of people at that particular point in history. White people, yellow people, brown people, all of these folks. If you know anything about the history of the Black Panther Party, you know that the initiative, and that's where my ideology began, but you know that we never talked about the inseparability of race. You knew that. The Rainbow Coalition, the idea, the notion of the Rainbow Coalition came from the Black Panther Party, not Jesse Jackson.
That's why I surprised you.
So therefore for you to misconstrue what I'm saying
I
to see.
I was surprised to hear you say what you said, which is because I know that.
Well, if you knew that, then you knew what I was saying wasn't that.
Maybe you changed.
Maybe I changed.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think that if I change, everybody changes. I think if I change, if anything, I've become more radical. But what I'm trying to point out here is that when we look at the Voting Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act didn't occur from within. It didn't occur from within. It came from without. You see? None of these historical changes that you cited came about as the result of the goodwill of people inside of government. It didn't come about because of that.
I just need to let folks know before people start hearing the mass numbers, we did not try to cover the cost of food tonight. A lot of people breezed by us or didn't pay. So I realized that it was $5 or whatever you can do. If you could throw a little bit more in there, that would be really appreciated because...
Just remember, when you bring up Omia in the Black Caucus...
What's that?
No, I'm telling you, brother, when you bring up Omia in the Black Caucus, don't be surprised if everybody look at you like you're crazy. Everybody in there knows about me.
I'll get word back to you.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. Give Bobby Rush my regards.
Let me out with your mail.
Don't forget to call you up, you guys.
Please don't be.
Okay, so, yeah,
what's that?
Okay,
you
want
me out with your mail?
Okay, we're going to wrap it up here. All right.